Welcome to the Miracle Camp podcast, and thanks for checking out this recording from Man Camp. Please enjoy listening to our speaker from the weekend.
My wife and I went out praying this morning. We do, it's a kind of our Sunday morning routine is we go out and just walk. Just walk and pray together and just praying for you guys. John's right. The next time every person in this room is together again probably will be eternity, which is a crazy thought. But it's one I look forward to. I do. It's good to worship together. Thinking this morning, this thought crossed my mind for some reason. I thought, I'm curious to what you think. The question that crossed my mind is God humble? I thought, like, well, maybe. Is God humble? Is God self-forgetful? It's a tricky question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The answer is yes and no. He is in the sense that he gave up everything of himself for us. There couldn't be a more self-forgetful act than what Jesus did on the cross. And he did it for him. We don't often think of God that way, but he did it for him. This passage was running through my mind this morning as I was driving here. In Colossians chapter 1, Paul's writing to the Colossian church, and he's writing about Jesus, and he says about Jesus, he says, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. By him all things were created, whether things in heaven or on earth, visible and invisible, all things were created by him and for him. All things are for him. He is above all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He's the firstborn from among the dead, so then everything, he might have the supremacy. Everything we do here this weekend is about him. That's not humble. He wants all the glory. He wants all of it. And he deserves all of it. He's the only one who deserves it. We're out there seeking glory for ourselves. That's pride. God is not prideful. God is awesome. All the glory goes to him. And so I think about a weekend like this, you know, oh, good speaking. Honestly, this is my offering to him. That's all it is. This is my offering to my God. And I pray to God he uses it. You guys bring an offering too, every one of you. You sacrifice time with your families, getting away, whatever. It's an offering to him. And it's good for us to think like that. To remember that, boy, at the end of the day, life really isn't about us. It's really not. Eternity isn't about us. It's just not. It's about him. And John's right. It's going to be awesome. there's a song, I mean, the number of songs that come to mind, but one that very few people know, but it resonates in my heart. The last chorus is, on golden shores of sure salvation, I will run to meet my king. And I can't tell you how I look forward to that day. I do. I'm going to run and meet my king. And we're going to have fellowship like we have not had up to this point. And in the meantime, we're going to be faithful men. What else is there, right? We're going to finish up today. Story of Nehemiah, not the whole thing. We're going to end in chapter 6. There's 13 chapters in Nehemiah. So there's more to this story than what we're going to talk about today. But we're going to end our time together talking about Nehemiah 6. Before we do that, just a quick review of where we've been this weekend. Chapters 1 and 2, we talked about what word? Vision. Amen. God gives us a vision. Opposition's going to come, and what do we need? Perseverance and Discipline, absolutely. Train yourself to be godly. Over all those things, we need it badly, guys. What do we need more than anything else in all that? We need humility. More of him, less of us. We need humility, self-forgetfulness. And that brings us to chapter 6. So you can read along with me. I'm going to, there's kind of two pieces of chapter 6 that we're going to have to deal with today. We said chapter 4, there's opposition, and that opposition really is about kind of attacks of our attention, right? There's all these taunts and whatnot, just trying to get our attention diverted from the task. Chapter 6 is a different challenge that Nehemiah is facing. This is the attack of our character, okay? And we'll see there's just two ways the enemy does that, and we'll have to break down each one of them individually. So I'm going to read the first section, we'll talk about it, and then we'll move on from there. We're going to start in chapter 6, we'll read 1 through 9. It says, "When the word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies, that I had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gate, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messengers to them with this reply. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Four times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer." We're going to pause right there. So you've got the three knuckleheads, right? It's Sanballat and Tobiah and this Geshem the Arab, all their enemies. From a geographical standpoint, those guys are not in Jerusalem. Okay, it's not like they're just right outside the gates. They're a ways away. They're like off in Trans-Euphrates, which is miles away. And so they're communicating. They're not texting, right? Okay, they're communicating back and forth via letter. And so you get this guy on the horse, and he gets there. And here's the letter. Tell him no, and back he goes. And so there's this back and forth. I've said this before to different folks. I look at the book of Nehemiah, and I think all this has to happen in about the span of about 46 minutes. And it doesn't. There's days in between. I mean, there's a lot of time back and forth and all this stuff. But the idea that Sanballat and those guys are thinking is, let's get Nehemiah, get the leader out of there. We can give him the business, and if we take away the leader, you strike the shepherd, what happens to the sheep? The sheep scatter, right? Now, Nehemiah is a little too clever for that. He's not going to get caught up in that. He's a guy of discipline, a guy of purpose. Like, you're not going to distract me from the goal. No, I'm not doing it. Not doing it. So, what happens? The fifth time, this is verse 5. The fifth time, Sanballat and his aide sent his aid to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter in which was written, here's what it says, "It's reported among the nations, and Geshem says it to be true," so that must mean a lot, "that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become their king, and even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem, there is a king in Judah. Now, this report will get back to the king, so come, let us confer together." I sent him this reply, "Nothing like what you are saying is happening. You're just making it up out of your head." I know it. I have been waiting years to say that to somebody. And I have not had the opportunity yet. I keep waiting, like, "You're just making that up out of your head." It's just an awesome line. Okay, so what's the strategy now? Like, the goal, okay, let's get him out of there, just asking him to come in and work, and let's send him a letter. Now, there's something really unique about this letter. I don't know if you caught it. It's unsealed. Do you ever open up your mail? You get out of the mail, but who has a mailbox these days? Everybody has a mailbox? Okay, good. Mail is, it comes with a stamp, those little things, and you pull it out, and your mail is open. You ever have that? How do you feel about that? Not great. That's a great, not great. Like, who looked at my mail? Even if it's a bill, who cares? Like, who looked at my mail? That's exactly what they're doing with this. This is strategic, okay? You seal a letter in old, even New Testament times. You sealed it with wax to make sure that the guy who got it knew nobody else looked at this. Now, if you're sending an unsealed letter, why are you doing that? You want it to be read. And not only do you want it to be read, you want Nehemiah to know it's been read. Because you got this guy on horseback, right? Anybody he crosses paths with could read this letter. Not a bad strategy, honestly. You want to intimidate somebody? You want to get them off their game? That is not a bad strategy. We don't have to spend any more time on verse that. I mean, that's just an awesome reply. You're just making it up out of your head. What's the goal? I mean, the goal is to harm Nehemiah, but at the end of the day, what is the goal of Sanballat, Geshem, and Tobiah? Bingo. Get them to quit. Right? It's to get them to quit. But we've already talked about this, haven't we? We're not going to quit. And Nehemiah is thinking the same thing. Okay, the goal is to get them to quit. We're not going to quit. Would you agree that lies can be a distraction? Everybody had anybody attack your character through lies? Not awesome. Not awesome. Had happened once in the church. A leader with me, a while ago, and he went around talking to other people in the church saying, yeah, this guy is a wolf in sheep's clothing. That hurt. Because Jesus used that phrase once in Scripture. And you know who he was talking about? The Pharisees, who were enemies of the church and enemies of Christ. I went, whoa, that's an accusation, right? And you guys have probably had similar things, not all of you, but some of you have. I know that. What do you do when those accusations come? That's exactly what you do. You try to defend yourself. And yet, what can you do, right? It's one person's word against yours. Especially when the accusation is a character issue, not like a he did issue. Do you know what I mean? I mean, hey, you embezzled money. Well, go look at the books. You know, oh, I didn't. That's an easy one. But, hey, you're prideful. Hey, you hate so-and-so. I mean, like, how do I prove I'm right? How do I prove you're wrong? How do you do that? And Nehemiah is kind of left in the same place. They say, hey, you're plotting this revolt. And Nehemiah's like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. And I love his response because the first thing he says is, it's just not true. It's the best I got for you. It's not true. But then the other thing, this, and we haven't read this yet, it says in verse 9, they were trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed, trying to get them to quit. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. It's a very simple prayer. I prayed, strengthen my hands. That attack of a lie comes, trying to kind of disparage his character, and all he can do is turn back to God. The God who sees all things and knows all things. He knows. It's funny, I mean, we talk about this idea, does God own all things? Of course, the answer is yes, right? Your car, you don't own that, God owns that. Your house, you don't own that either, God owns that. You don't even own your wife, God owns that too. God owns it all. How about your reputation? He owns that too. And it's hard because, I mean, I'll be honest, you guys, like my reputation, that means something to me. You can take my house, but don't you dare disparage my reputation. Do you know what I mean? That's me you're talking about. My house, I don't even care about that. I care a little. Not a whole lot about that. But when you start talking about my character, I do care a lot about that. Do you know how hard it is to just entrust that to God? I say, you guys, you can think whatever you want. You can think whatever you want about me. All that matters is what he thinks of me. Easy to agree with, hard to live. And yet that's exactly what we're called to. That is the hard part about this life, because you will face lies. You'll face them outside, you'll get them from inside. And I just love Nehemiah's response that, okay, I'm not going to get dragged down into that. We're not going to get into a name-calling contest. We're not going to get, well, you think I got problems, look at your... We're not even going to get into that. God owns my reputation. He does. I'm going to be content with that. I'm telling you, that is not easy. It is not easy to do. But he's trustworthy with my reputation. I know that. And I'm going to stand before him someday. And there's plenty I've done wrong. I know that. and the blood of Christ has covered it. And there's things I've been accused of that aren't true. And he will make that right too. He will. And it's a good place to be content in that space, even in the midst of those trials. Those are dark days, you know. When those times are happening, there's conflict within the church, and just stuff getting thrown back. Those are dark times, hardest time of my life, to be honest with you. But God's faithful, and he knows. I wish the whole challenge stopped there, but it doesn't, because these guys are committed. I mean, you think that we're committed to our task, the enemy is committed to his. Even bigger. Yeah. So, they keep going. Verse 10, let's see what happens next. It says, one day I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Deliah, son of Mehetabel, who was shut in his house. He said, let us meet in the house of God inside the temple, and let us close the temple doors, because men are coming to kill you. By night, they are coming to kill you. Pause for a second. Let's get a sense as to what's going on here. You got this guy. We don't even know who he is. We know who his dad and his grandpa are, but we don't really know much about this guy. But what he's saying to Nehemiah is, your life is in danger. True? Probably. Your life is in danger. So, I have a plan. Let's you and I hole up in the temple, and you'll be safe there. True? Probably. This guy may have been a priest, which is why you can say, let's go into the temple. What do we know about Nehemiah? Was he a priest? He was not. He was a governor. Was he allowed to go in the temple like that? He was not. He'd go in the temple complex. He could not go inside the temple. And so now we have a conundrum. Now we've got a small problem, right? Your life is in danger, so let's break the law. It's great. Would you understand if Nehemiah goes, well, usually I'd say no, but these are desperate times. And I've heard that desperate times call for very desperate measures. God will understand. It's his house, right? He'll make an exception this one. I'll ask for forgiveness even. Could you at least reason that through your mind and go, yeah, I could work with that. I could. I could understand it. I wouldn't agree with it, but I could totally understand it. This is what Nehemiah says. But I said, should a man like me run away? I love that. Should a man like me run away? Heck no. Uh-uh. Or should one like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go. I won't do it. I realize that God had not sent him, this is kind of the backstory now, I realize that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Wonderful. That's fantastic. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this, and then they would give me a bad name to discredit me. So in the first part of chapter 6, the goal is with these lies, just distract him with lies. Say something about him that isn't true so that he'll quit. Now the goal is say something about him that is true so that he'll quit. You see the difference in strategy? We're going to say something, okay, well, we can't prove that he's going to revolt. If we can get him to sin, now we can discredit him. The first part, kind of distract him so that he wants to quit. Now it's discredit him so that he has to quit. Again, not a bad strategy. What we're talking about here is this idea of compromise. Compromise. It's this idea of saying, I will give most to God. I will give most, not all. And he'll understand. E.W. Tozer, he wrote and he said this, Christianity is so entangled with the world that millions never guess how radically they have missed the New Testament pattern. Compromise is everywhere. That was in the 50s, guys. Compromise is everywhere, he said. Compromise is so easy to do. It is. It's so easy. I spent the better part of the last 2 weeks trying to think of some examples, and it's not easy because, like, Nehemiah kind of is in a unique situation. Like, there's not many situations that we're in where, hey, somebody says, hey, your life is in danger. Go sin. There's not a lot of that here. But I've seen and heard different things through my time where, and I'll give you an example. So, we worked with youth for 15 years. And I can't tell you how many times I heard this. Not that it happened 100 times, but it was more than two. You get this young guy, and he's, I'm going to date this unbelieving girl. Why? Because I'm going to lead her to Jesus. Has it happened? It has. I mean, to be honest, that's my story. My wife was a believer. I was not. She started to date me. She should have dated me. I'm serious. She never should have even started. She was not discipled. She was not mature, anything like that. All she knew was the gospel. But she never should have started dating me. And God was merciful. He did rest. And we didn't get married both as unbelievers. We got both married as believers, so it worked in that sense. But it does happen, but not usually. And you know what that is? That's compromise. That's saying, I've got a better plan than what God does. Paul in 1 Corinthians 9, and you're probably familiar with this, he writes, he says, like, to the Jews I became like a Jew so as to win the Jews, and to those under the law I became like one under the law so as to win those under the law, though I myself am not under the law, and so on and so forth, right? Like, I became all things to all men. And I have seen people abuse that text to be just like the world. That's compromise. That's all it is compromise. At the end of the day, we've picked on like three different words, one each time we've been together. The first one was vision, the second was perseverance or discipline, the third was humility. At the end of the day, the one word I keep coming back to when I read this text, what do we need more than anything else when it comes to this? We need to be men of integrity. We need to be men of integrity. Would you agree there's a difference between a man of integrity and being sinless? I hope so, because there's not one sinless person in this room. We need to be men who, when people point the finger, they're not pointing at anything we haven't already addressed. And this is not a new concept, by the way. One of the qualifications of elders, 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, talks about how men should be blameless, above reproach. Those two words, blameless, above reproach. And what does that mean? This is what that means. They need to be men of integrity, men who deal with their sin. Doesn't mean they don't sin. But when they do sin, what do they do with it? What do they do with it? I've heard, there was a song back in the 90s. Anybody heard of the group DC Talk? Yeah, okay, good, good, I feel good. Yeah, back, remember those days way back then? Jesus Freak, all that kind of stuff. Well, they sang a song, and at the beginning of the song, the lead singer, he says the greatest single cause of atheism in the world today is Christians who acknowledge Jesus with their lips and walk out the door and deny him by their lifestyle. That is what an unbelieving world simply finds unbelievable. What if I stumble? That's right. And there's this reality. Is everybody in this room going to stumble? Yes. Every one of us. Failure ought to be our friend. Right. How do you stand back up? That's a great way to say it. How do you stand back up? Who's going to be the first to recognize sin? Is it going to be me or is it going to be my neighbor? Right? I mean, there's a difference between me confessing sin and me being caught in sin. I think about David. You know, was David a godly man? He was. David was a godly man, not a sinless man. Definitely not. And it took Nathan the prophet coming to him and telling this little parable, this little story, to say, you know, there's this guy out there, and he kind of, you know, the whole sheep story, like, hey, you know, what's up with that? And David is enraged by this, by a story. David's like, I'm going to go get this dude. And Nathan has the guts to say, you're that man. You're that guy. And that beat the alternative, by the way, of the community finding out. We ought to pray, every one of us, that we've got a Nathan in our life. I mean, honestly, the greatest compliment I've ever been paid, and I don't think there's another one that's going to come that's going to compare to this. My boss at work, he's a believer, and I love him. He said to me once, he said, you're my Nathan. And I've never been paid a greater compliment. We need those guys. We need those guys in our lives who are going to call us out on things so that we can be quick to confess, quick to repent, quick to turn. Because, I mean, there's whole websites set up to proclaim to Christians how churches are falling. It's true. I get on them because I'm curious. And every day there's new articles. This guy's caught in this sin. That guy's abusing so-and-so. I mean, it's all this stuff. Like, well, gosh, let's go proclaim it to the world. And Nehemiah's not going to get caught up in that stuff because there's something greater at stake than his life. Think about that for a second. There's something greater at stake than his life, and it's the honor of his God. Like, I'm not going to compromise for that. Sooner die, honestly. I mean, so you kill me, I go to heaven. What's the worst that happens, right? I'm so impressed by that. And I've never been put in a situation like this that I remember. But I'm like, oh, if I ever do, God, I want to respond well. I don't want to love this life so much that I'll compromise for that. I don't want to love men's approval so much that I'll compromise for that. I don't want to love anything so much that I would compromise for that. What's he worth? What's he worth? I should say this too. There is a bit of attention in this. Tell a little story from the Bible. Mark chapter 2. Jesus is walking along, and he's got his disciples in tow, and they're walking along, and they're picking heads of grain out of the grain fields. It's a little snack, right? It doesn't sound like much of a snack to me, but even so, they're topping them in. And it's on the Sabbath. And so the Pharisees come along, like, hey, you guys are harvesting on the Sabbath. That's a big no-no. Which is insane. I mean, like, really? But okay, whatever. So Jesus has this response, and I think it's fascinating. In Mark chapter 2, he says this. He says, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. You ever heard that one? Do you know what it means? Here's what Jesus is saying. David, was David a priest? No. Not a Levite. He was a man of Judah, and so he was a king. Had no business going. He certainly didn't have any right to eat the consecrated bread, right? He went and did what was unlawful. And yet it seems like Jesus is saying, okie doke with me. Like, okay, what's up with, so we can break the law when we're hungry? I mean, like, what's the truth there? What was that? What about Nehemiah? Okay, this is the test, right? This is the challenge in life, because we love black and white. We love black and white. Just tell me what to do. Give me a law. You know, we say we don't love the law anymore. We love the law because law tells us, okay, do this, don't do this. God is not black and white. I'm just going to tell you that right now. God is very gray. And that doesn't mean there's no truth. There is one truth, okay? Don't mishear that. But there's nuance. Does God care about our motives? Big time. You can go eat that consecrated bread with the wrong motive, and God says, do not do that. And you can go eat that consecrated bread with the right motive, and God says, okay, now what's the right motive? Jesus said this. Well, okay, there's two commands. Sum up the law in two commands. Love God, love people. The entire law and the prophets are summed up in those two ideas. Love God, love people. Was David doing that for the sake of his people? He was. I mean, he was a little hungry himself. It was like, okay, is this done out of selfishness or is this done out of love? Let me ask you this. Is it right to lie? This is not in my notes, by the way. You guys asked for this. Is it right to lie? No. Is it ever right to lie? You ever plan a surprise birthday party? You know what that is? It's not lying. It's called deceit. It doesn't sound better. But why are you doing it? It's out of love, right? And God says, love is what matters. There's gray in that. I'm not suggesting you go punch somebody in the face, say, I love you, it's okay. It's not okay. But I think there are opportunities for us to not be so stinking rigid. And I know there's incredible danger in saying what I'm saying. Because some people are going to walk out of here saying, oh, it's okay to sin. I am not saying that. I'm not. What I'm saying is we need to honor God's law and we need to love people. And there's a tension in there sometimes that does not easily agree. And so we need to be so discerning. So discerning. Was it right for Nehemiah to enter that temple? No, it wasn't. Because all he was protecting was himself. Was it right for Jesus to heal on a Sabbath? Absolutely it was. Because he wasn't thinking of himself. He was thinking of others. There's a difference there. And it's not easy. What it comes back to is integrity. Did Jesus' life match up with his words? They did. Every time. Think about the idea of integrity. How would you define integrity? What is it? And don't give me a synonym. Oh, it's blameless. Okay, I use that one. That doesn't count. What does it mean? Doing the right thing when no one's looking. I like that. Yeah. Who am I when people see me? Am I the exact same person when people don't see me? The walk matches the talk. When people see me on Sunday, would they say the same guy on Monday? When people talk to me in church, would they see me having those same kind of conversations in the workplace? That's integrity. I preached a message years ago, and this was back when it was really cool to have titles, like cool titles. Like these days, today's title would be integrity. I'm all out of creativity. I got nothing. But back in the day, I was like, oh, let's come up with some cute title. I was talking about integrity. And what I titled it was Living Like Oranges in a Watermelon World. You like that? Isn't that good? Is it? It ought to be. I don't know. It was original to me at the time. I didn't publish it. Anyway, the point is, oranges, it's the perfect image of integrity. Color of it on the outside, it's orange. The color on the inside, it's orange. It's even called orange. Everything about it says orange. Watermelon, hard on the outside, squishy on the inside. Green on the outside, red on the inside. You know, like there's nothing that agrees from the outside to the inside. If you know nothing about a watermelon, you start hitting on it, are you going to expect what's inside? No. No, there's no integrity whatsoever in a watermelon. And we're talking about fruit here. There's no integrity whatsoever in a watermelon. We need to be, we got to be like oranges, fellas. I mean, it's like, okay, what they see on the outside ought to be what they see wherever I am. That's integrity. On some level, integrity is, I'm an open book. We don't do that well. We don't share. There's danger in that, right? Why don't we share? Because I ain't going to let anybody know my junk. And the church hurts for that. I mean, that's what I love about times like this. It's we get alone together, and hey, let's just be honest with one another. I mean, I feel like I can be honest with you. I've shared like my greatest fears. Okay, you don't know me. Great. Trying to do that with guys. Like, okay, start with your spouse. If you have a spouse, start with her. Be an open book. It comes with risks. It does. The moment you open up your life to somebody else, and not the good stuff, right? That's not hard. Hey, I had a great day. Okay. The junk. Who's going to help you walk through the junk? Right? And you look around with the guys that came with you, those guys are the guys that are going to walk with you through that junk. I treasure that group of men I have with as elders, because we do. We share our junk. It's not pretty. It's necessary, because I want to be a man of integrity. I want to deal with that stuff rightly. I want to share one last thought here. Well, it's second to the last thought. We're talking about this idea of integrity and how, and that is, it's an individual thing, but it's a group thing all at the same time. Do you see that? Like I have to be a man of integrity myself. Nobody can do that for me, but I need one another for that. I love this picture that Scripture gives, how over the last weekend, over the last 52 days, actually, we're not quite there. The wall is going to get done. Over the course of these last six chapters, the whole point has been rebuild walls. Rebuild walls. Why is Nehemiah so devastated by the fact that the walls are broken down? Like, who cares? You got the temple. At the end of the day, isn't that what matters? Who cares about the walls? Why? Vulnerability. The walls were there for defense. That's what they're there for, right? It's protecting the integrity of the dwelling. I like that a lot. Hold on to that thought. Oh, that's good. Protecting the integrity of the dwelling, absolutely. The city that we teach in, or we travel to in Iraq, is named Erbil. It's up in the north in Kurdistan. It is what they say is the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world. So for 5,000 years, people have continued to live in the city. And there's a citadel, like this big mound in the middle of the city with the old city, the walls. It's the neatest thing I've ever seen because, I mean, it's like a walled city. It's just like what we're talking about. And you go, yeah, I mean, I can see how that works, right? Really tough to invade that thing. Keep that picture in your mind. Walls are for defense. There's a verse in Proverbs. Proverbs 25:28, you can write that down. Proverbs 25:28 says this: like a city whose walls are broken down is a man who lacks self-control. Like a city whose walls are broken down is a man who lacks self-control. Let's go back to what this gentleman said. He said, the walls are there to defend the integrity of the city. We're no different. We're a really small city of one. And I think there's something to that, this idea that I need to be a man who has my defenses around me, right? Because if my walls are broken down, I am defenseless against the enemy. And that can come in many ways, many shapes, many sizes. It doesn't happen accidentally, by the way. Do you know those walls didn't just magically appear between chapters 1 and chapter 6? Like, whoa, look at that. We woke up. It's a miracle. God did it. That's not usually the way it works. God can do that, but that's not usually the way it works. It takes intentionality, right? It takes time. It takes effort. It takes all of those things. Usually, as in the case of Nehemiah, it takes more than one. It takes us to restore those walls. Teamwork, absolutely. And this is just a great question of self-reflection. I mean, like, where are the walls broken down in our lives? Are they in our churches, in our families, in our individual lives? I mean, I look at a group like this, 100 guys, 120 guys, something like that, I would all but guarantee at least one guy in this room has looked at pornography in the last week. I know the stats well. I'm a statistician. I know the stats well enough. I would all but guarantee that's the case. Oh, but we all go to church. Does not matter. Trust me. Where are the walls broken down? Say, if we're going to be good leaders, before humility, before perseverance, before any of those things, if we don't have integrity, like, don't even start. Get that figured out first. It's just, it's the way it is. I know what it is to wrestle with pornography. I do. Fought that battle years ago, but it's awful. And that's not the only one. That's the one that gets all the publicity, right? That's that gets all the press. It's bad. There's other things. There's anger. There's pride. There's gossip. There's all these things that can have a hold in our life that the enemy can use. And I'm just pleading with you guys, take that stuff seriously. There's a root that can grow that can do you guys try to weed things, right? I mean, I got a plot of woods and stuff, trying to take things out. Man, those roots grow deep. And for weeds, right? I mean, tree roots grow deep too, but weeds, man. And that's sin. And if we water it, they'll grow. They'll grow. Need to be men of integrity. I think this is awesome, though. Because Nehemiah, I mean, I'm being kind of hard on this, but I look at the life of Nehemiah, and he had vision. It's possible. And he did persevere. And that's possible. And he was humble at the same time. Like, he had all those things going. He was just a man. He had all this. He was a man of integrity. He had all of those things. That is possible. It should be likely. That should be a part of us. And it's so cool because in verse 15 of chapter 6, it says, so the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. That's crazy. When all of our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and they lost their self-confidence, because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. That is that's like the end of the story. That's wonderful. I love that, okay, it had been done with the help of our God. There's no other way to look at it. God didn't build it for them. They had to get out there and do the work, but it had done with the help of our God. And there's this reality, this is not the end of the story. They did it, and now there's new vision. There's new opposition. You can read the rest of Nehemiah. It's just the same story over and over again. There's new vision. There's new opposition. There's new need for perseverance. There's new need for humility. There's new need for integrity. And that never ends. That's the story of our lives. We come away from a camp like this and like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go get them. And you're going to face challenges. And you're going to get to the point, well, okay, we did it. We did it. And then God's question to you is, okay, what's next? What's next? Because we're not done. We're not done till we go home. So I want this weekend to be the springboard of something great. I really do. And I don't even know what it is. Done enough camp ministries to know that there are pluses and minuses with weekends like this. There is an incredible blessing with being together, away from life, away from the responsibilities of home, away from the responsibilities of work, all that stuff, and just be with men and be with God. That is a huge blessing. And there's a danger with it too. And I am not knocking camp. I love camp. But there's a danger with it. And the danger is this: you're going back home. And when we worked with youth, like, there was this spiritual high Saturday night. I hated Saturday nights. Because Saturday night, we get done, we have, you know, this invitation, who wants to change your life? And they're all crying and blubbering over each other. And we get back home, and by Thursday, nothing has changed. I'm like, what the heck did we just do? And I got to the point, like, okay, stop crying. Do not cry in front of me. Don't do it. And that's not the right response. I get that. But it's like I don't need to see the emotion if there's not going to be change. And so I want us to be serious about this, guys. Do not go home and, like, just slide right back into the normal day-to-day. Just don't do it. I mean, there's guys in here who are still in high school, right? A few of you, right? You may not be leaders right now. That's okay. God may still be growing in you. He should be growing in you. Integrity. You're not too young to have integrity. You're not too young to learn humility. Right? You're not too young to learn what discipline is and what perseverance is. You're not even too young to have vision. You might be too young to lead somebody, but you can learn. Every one of you guys should go home with something different, something that God spoke to you about this weekend. I pray for that. Pray for me in that. I mean, God's not done with me. This is just one more weekend for me. I'm going to go back home. You know what I'm going to do on Monday? I'm going to get in my car, and I'm going to drive to work. I thank you. I need that. I've been so incredibly grateful for this time with you guys this weekend. I have. I have been blessed. I hope you have too. God is exceedingly good. He is so good. And it's good to get to know him. It's good to get to know him better in the company of you. So thank you for this opportunity. I don't want to pray to end. I want to sing to end.
Thanks for listening to this chapel session and for diving into Scripture with us. We hope you've been encouraged in your walk with Jesus, and we hope to see you here at camp for next year's Man Camp. So, thanks again, and have a great rest of your day.